Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bar Curious podcast. My name is Mike Stojic, and with me, as always, is Joey Barber.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Doing pretty good, Joey. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Nice. So we're drinking on some Tennessee whiskey.
We are. Uncle Nearest.
Yeah, I was about to say it, but not just any Tennessee whiskey.
Well, I had to get on there before you did.
You did. You jumped in there quick.
Yeah, you like that?
Well done, sir. Well done. You cut me off. You're cut off, guys. No, but we're drinking Uncle Nearest because we're here to tell Uncle Nearest a story. So we got a little curious about the man and thought we would dig into that.
Unique story. That's extremely fascinating.
Amazingly fascinating, and probably one of the greatest whiskey stories almost never told.
Yeah.
It was only maybe 4 years ago that the story actually was brought to light by a New York Times article in 2016. Right?
Yeah. And then we'll get into it, but a lady by the name of Fawn Weaver saw that article and then kind of ran with it and really dug into it and gave us the story that we know now about Uncle Nearest.
About Nathan Green, who really, had it not been for him, we would probably not have Tennessee whiskey.
Not as we know it.
Definitely not as we know it. Well, you'd have whiskey from Tennessee.
There'd be whiskey from Tennessee, but not Tennessee whiskey as we know it.
We owe everything to a freed slave named Nathan Green, who was Jack Daniel's first master distiller.
Yeah, amazing. And he was the first African-American master distiller on record in the U.S., actually.
Remarkable. And it was done just after the Emancipation Proclamation was ratified in
1863.
It was ratified in 65, right?
65 is the 13th Amendment. Yep.
Yep. All right. So anyway, let's get into it.
So who is Nathan Green?
So who is...
that's the real question, Mike. Who is Nathan Green?
So Uncle Nearest was born sometime around the 1820s. We don't know exactly when, but the remarkable thing about when and where he was born was he was born in Maryland.
Yeah, free state.
A free state. During a time when slavery was a very real thing.
Yeah, at its peak almost.
Yeah, and then you wonder, well, how did he become a slave? You know, because at some point he became a freed slave, like as we just mentioned earlier. Right. So in order to be a free slave, you would have had to have been a slave at one point. But this man was born in Maryland, which was a free state, and it did not have slavery. So one of the things that's lost is kind of how that happened or what happened in his life between the time he was born until the time he began working for a man named Dan Call, which we'll get into in a little bit. But what we do know is that he ended up belonging to a company called Landis & Green, who then hired him out, almost like a temp service to Dan Call. So you're like, well, how could that possibly happen? What if you think about it, something that was fairly common during those times where there were agencies that existed that would, you know, travel north into the freed states looking for runaway slaves. Because, you know, the Underground Railroad and some of the other...
forms of getting out.
I guess forms of getting out. So they had these agencies that were, you know, would go up north and capture...
Innocent, free people,
Some of them might have been freed slaves. Oftentimes, I would imagine a lot of them were innocent African-Americans that were born in these freed states, a lot like Nathan Green, who was born in Maryland. So what likely happened, if my take on it, is that this agency went up there collecting bodies, like human trafficking.
Yeah, and Green just happened to be one of them.
Green just happened to be one of them. And they snatched him up, brought him down, and you know, listed his set of skills. Dan Call needed
a distiller.
A distiller, because he was a preacher who ran a grocery store and also made whiskey.
So you can't do that by yourself.
You can't do all those things. And basically hired out Nathan Green. So he still belonged to the Landis Green Company.
Yeah.
But he was working for Dan Call, right?
In Tennessee.
Yeah. And I guess he's working for him for some amount of time, right? We don't really know.
Yeah, that's kind of lost. Like we just know that he ended up on that farm in Tennessee, not sure what year, but it was definitely around 1840s, at least 1850s at the latest.
Right. You know, sometime in there, a young 10-year-old, I think we're around 10, 11 years old.
Yeah, very young. Yeah, preteen.
Little white kid comes stumbling up to Dan Call's.
Essentially looking for work from Dan Call.
Imagine this guy going, mister, any work for a poor orphan boy? A
little chore boy.
Yeah, a little chore boy around your grocery store. And Dan was like,
where is he from? What accent was that?
I don't know. He's Tennessee. That's definitely not a Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it's like one of those like get your paper type things.
Papers here, papers. He might have handed out papers.
You never know.
Who knows? He might write out of Dan's grocery. So anyway, Dan's like, as a matter of fact, I do need him.
Yeah, I have plenty of work for a 10-year-old boy to do around here.
So put him to work.
Yeah.
Put him to work, probably sweeping floors, stocking shelves, running the register. What else would he have done? Selling papers?
Yeah, selling papers, special. Yeah.
Get your paper here. The Tennessee Times.
So anyway.
So he's there, right? He's working for Dan Call, and what does he see?
The smoke in the distance.
The smoke in the distance. The smoke on a hill.
Yeah.
Which I imagine would have been like so storybook. You know, you're like looking out into old wilderness Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. There's a painting of that somewhere. There has to be. Yeah.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And then off in the distance, there's a smoke rising. And then young Jasper says.
Yeah. And he sees the smoke rising. And he
sees. The hell is all that?
Yeah. Essentially. Yeah. He said, what is that?
Sound the alarm. There's a fire in them hills.
Well, he sees that and he sees the horse and carriages going up and down every day. And he starts to get curious about it. Starts to get bar curious.
Got a little bar curious, yeah. Did he?
So anyway, so he gets curious about this and asks Dan Call. He's, you know, asking what's going on. And eventually Dan explained to him that there is a whiskey still up there. And so this little boy got super curious and just said, you know, I want to find out everything about this whiskey and what's going on with this. So that's kind of how that
started. Because I imagine it's hard for us to think now, but an 11, 12-year-old was definitely dipping into some whiskey.
Oh, back then,
everyone was drinking
probably for sure,
without doubt. So he was like, "Well, I already drink the stuff."
You know what? I'm really interested in and where this is coming from.
Hey, so Dan, I'm already drinking this stuff. Huh? I'd like to know how to tell me more. Right?
Show me where it comes from. Yeah, so that's kind of how that got started.
Yeah, that's probably just like that. Yo, Dan, bro, come on, help me out. I want to learn this stuff. So Dan Call finally says, "You know what, Jasper? I'm gonna show you." So he takes him up the hill and he introduces him to Uncle Nearest, who at the time was still a slave.
Yeah, yep.
Working on Dan Call still and making some of the...
Pretty much just making the whiskey at that point.
Yeah, was kind of the master distiller there, just making all the... That was kind of his primary role, was just make whiskey.
Right.
And he was really, really good at it. He was making some of the best whiskey around. In fact, he got renowned for making some of the best whiskey around. Knowing that, Dan says to Uncle Nearest... Or he says first to
the little boy.
Jasper.
Yeah.
He says to Jasper, he's like, Uncle Nearest is the best whiskey maker I know of. And that's how he made the introduction.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of neat. And then he looks over to Uncle Nearest and he says, I want Jack to become the world's best whiskey distiller if he wants to be. You help me teach him. You know, kind of like that. And basically entrusted Nathan Green, Uncle Nearest, to teach this young boy how to make whiskey,
which is also incredible because this kid is not even 13 years old yet.
He probably wasn't even 13.
You know what? Just why don't you teach this 10-year-old how to make whiskey? So yeah, so essentially, Uncle Nearest took this kid under his wing and taught him everything that he knew. And I mean, this lasted for years. It wasn't just a quick thing. It was like, you know, they formed a friendship and a bond. And
yeah. And in a lot of ways, I like to, when you really hear the story, it's not just a friendship and a bond, but he almost became a father figure to him.
Yeah. Not just a mentor, but
He really took him under his wing. And it's likely that he spent more time and really learned not only the craft, but also how to be human from Nearest Green.
Yeah.
And he probably spent more time with him than he did with Dan Call.
Probably.
He was probably, you know, think about those times. He was probably always up in the hills, learning, researching, distilling, working on the craft.
Yeah.
Because another thing, you know, when you dig into Nathan's background was from all accounts, he was like a fun, full of life guy, which is weird to hear that.
A fiddle player.
Yeah. He played the fiddle. He liked to laugh and have a good time and socialize, which is weird to hear that, you know, considering that he was a slave. But I guess in his clothes, in that circle with the other guys up there making the still, or not making the still, working on the still, they were probably having fun, man. You know, and I know that's weird to say too. God, I know how this sounds. No, but if you consider like the best of a shitty situation,
right?
And we, you know, you don't know how what the situation really was.
Yeah, it may have been better than most, or it may have been worse than most.
I'd probably think it was better when, especially when you hear like the rest of the story.
Yeah, seeing the facts, it might lean towards that.
Well, we do know he was a.
He was a hell of a whiskey maker.
A hell of a whiskey maker. Yeah. He played the fiddle, had a good time, and likely Jasper
had 11 kids. Married with 11 kids.
11. 11 kids. 11 kids. Are you 13 again? I just,
is that whiskey getting to me?
So he taught him everything he knows. And one of the things that he taught him, which would really shape American whiskey, more specifically,
Tennessee whiskey
yeah. is something that would later become known as the Lincoln County process.
Yeah. And we pretty much think that Tennessee distilleries such as Jack Daniel's or George Dickel came up with this process or perfected it. But come to find out, Uncle Nearest really, really perfected it.
Yeah.
So essentially, what is the Lincoln County process is what we're going to get to.
Right. So, you know, almost everything in whiskey's heritage, right? Is that the right word? Whiskey, everything we know about whiskey today can almost be traced back to some sort of origin story. Yeah,
specific time or place or person. Place,
person, yep. Whatever. You can almost trace back every particular part of it with the exception of the Lincoln County process. It was almost like it fell out of the sky and it was just like,
here it is.
Jack Daniels was like, we do it. This is what we do. We charcoal filter. And you're like, where the hell did that come from? Yeah. And then we just wrote, well, that's
what we've been doing. That's what we do.
That's what they do. So it must be what it is. And come to find out that it was actually Nathan Green that taught him how to do this.
Yeah.
So, right? But so how did he learn?
But what is that though? I mean, the Lincoln County process, it's specifically for Tennessee whiskey. What they do is they filter it through charcoal before they put it in the barrel. And so that's supposed to get out impurities and purify it, clean it up a little bit before you put it in the barrel.
Right. And it does. And what one of the things it does when it pulls out some of those impurities and different congeners and things, and tannins. Actually, there's no tannins yet.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said that. But when it pulls out some of those impurities, it mellows it out. It makes it.
Smooths it out.
So, but where did it come from? You know, like that's what the process is. But how did these guys discover it? Is the question. And it come to find out that it was Nathan Green that taught him this process that would later become known as the Lincoln County process. And you're probably wondering,
where the hell did he come up with this?
Yeah. So, where did he come up with it, Joey? Like, tell us already.
The anticipation is building.
It's killing me. Tell me where you came up with it, Joey.
Well, so it's thought that this process actually came from West Africa. And so what they used to do back then is they would filter their river water through charcoal. It would get out impurities and purify it up enough to, you know, actually use as drinking water.
Right.
And so that's kind of where we think that it came from. And then Nathan Green started using that because that's all he knew. And that's what his ancestors taught him from before, that you should filter out with charcoal.
Yeah. And they're probably doing it. Yeah, obviously. seems pretty obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems right to me.
But it's remarkable that this is something that you can actually trace this to West Africa, and you can actually
kind of bridges that
show tribes in West Africa. Cause you know, there's some tribes there today that are still doing it the same way they did it like 500 years ago.
Yeah.
So they're still purifying water through charcoal.
Yeah. And I mean, and knowing that it came from a specific place, like we're talking about other whiskeys, that we can pin this down to West Africa, that bridges that gap and connects that. Where did this Lincoln County process come from?
Right.
It's, well, we can tell you where it came from.
We can actually tell you, yeah. Like, this is where it came from. Nathan Green was already doing this, was likely one of the reasons why Dan Call picked him up.
Cause he had this amazing. Green was spearheading whiskey in Tennessee at this time. And so, I mean, that's where it came from. And
he was probably one of the first in Tennessee to do this.
Yeah.
Actually, certainly was. I mean, you know, once we hear the rest of the story, which we will happily tell you.
After this?
After this.
All right. We'll be right back. Hey Hey everyone, Joey Barber here from Bar Curious Podcast. I want to tell you a little bit about my bar in Raleigh, North Carolina. Not only do we specialize in craft cocktails, but we've also won Best Whiskey Bar in Raleigh 2 years in a row. One of the things that sets us apart from the rest is our expansive collection of vintage spirits. We have everything from bourbon, scotch, gin, Amaros, dating back from Prohibition all the way to the 1990s. If there's a unique pour that you're looking for that no one else has, this is your spot. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Blind Barber, or email us at contact@blindbarber.com. Join our email list to be updated on future tastings and private events. Hey, Mike, you know who I hold in high regard?
Who's that, Joey?
Mechanics and people who know how to work on cars.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Back when I was a combat engineer in the Marine Corps, I had the opportunity to be a platoon commander of the heavy equipment platoon. And I'll tell you, my guys could fix anything.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have if you don't have the right parts.
That's right. And that's why when you are working on a car, you need to check out my friends, the LKQ crew. They're the number one in auto collision repair industry for parts both body and mechanical. Check them out at lkqcorp.com for more info and all your auto repair needs. LKQ crew.
That's good.
Everyone, welcome back. Thanks for staying with us.
They're still here. Some of them are still here listening.
So, all right, let's get back into it. What do we think? 10, 15 years, no one really knows how much time had passed. But we do know that slavery ended in 1865 with the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which freed Nathan Green. And we don't know why he stayed on with Dan Call, but I imagine at this time Dan's probably like, I don't know, 70 or 80.
He's probably up there.
He's got to be really old, right? But he decided to stay on, and I think
after being freed, he decided to stay with the same farm and Dan Call, and kind of kept doing what he had been doing,
which I think is kind of interesting too.
That's a whole other story.
It probably is, and there's a lot of speculation and. We're gonna stay out of that. We'll just go with what we know. How about that? So he stayed on. Jasper continued to make whiskey, and then a few years later, Jasper. And if you haven't figured this
out, 1875.
If you haven't figured this, okay. So 10 years later, yeah. Instead of few ten.
Well, a few to ten. That's not bad.
Yeah, potato.
Mike's dropped the name. I did. Accidentally a couple times, and you may have picked it up.
Jeez Louise, if you haven't figured it out already. The young lad.
Well, so the young lad, 1875, this young lad apparently received an inheritance from his father's estate after his father passed away. And at this point has been working with Uncle Nearest for, I mean,
almost probably, all, like,
yeah,
half,
20
most
years
of his life.
At this point.
Oh, yeah,
so,
most
yeah,
of
yeah,
his life.
Pretty long time. So he made a deal with Dan Call to buy his distillery. And mm-hmm. so Dan said, yeah, let's do that. And so this young boy, who's now a young man, bought the distillery, renamed it after himself, and it's now Jack Daniel's Distillery.
If you haven't figured it out, it's Jack Daniel.
Mike Stojic almost kept the secret the whole first 5 minutes. He almost kept it.
I'm like, I just want to tell you what it is.
That's what makes this a super interesting
story. An amazing story. Jack Daniel.
The largest American whiskey brand in the world.
Yep. Learned how to make whiskey
from Uncle Nearest,
who's
a slave on a Tennessee farm.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
So after Jack bought the distillery from Dan, like, did you mention this?
So you already mentioned it. Yeah.
He hired on Uncle Nearest to be his first master distiller, although they didn't call it a master distiller during those times. They called him a head distiller.
Yeah, head distiller.
But his true title.
Hired him, but asked him, would you please.
He actually asked him.
Yeah, he said, would you please be my head distiller?
Which is, I think, a true test to Jack's character.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't just assume like you're going to work for me.
You've been doing this for 40 years. You might as well keep being
a stiller. But he didn't. He asked him. And I think that's a very human thing to do is to ask somebody rather than just assume that you're going to work
for me. Yeah, and I think this goes back to us. I mean, you know, we didn't get on it too much, but like just talking about their bond and this like mentorship and this sort of father-son kind of camaraderie thing that they had, and, you know.
Yeah, you can tell he meant a lot. And I think one of the most telling things for me was when I found this photo, and you can see it.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, just really Google George Green and Jack Daniels. That's right. All you have to do, and this photo will pop up.
Yeah. And it was George's Nathan's son.
Yep.
As Nathan had three of his sons work for Jack Daniel.
Yeah.
So he kept it in the family, which is pretty remarkable. And we'll talk about how that family really took off. But so there's this photo. It's George Green sitting next to Jack Daniels.
Yeah, it's essentially a photo with probably what, surrounded 20, by 20 different distillery 20 workers. 20 other
distillery workers who are all white.
All whites. Jack Daniels right in the middle and George Green
right next to him.
Directly beside him.
Center of the photo, George and Jack side by side, surrounded by all white workers. He chose to sit next to, you know what I mean? Like he didn't have to have them there. And especially
back in that day. I mean, that had to be a testament of, you know, just the respect that he had for the Green family and Uncle Nearest. You know, that
for sure
has to be something in that.
For sure. Because just think about those times. I mean, the Civil War just ended. And here you have this man, Jack Daniel, who was like this Southern gentleman. He was held in this high regard. He was an entrepreneur. He was moving his whiskey. He was known as one of the best whiskey makers because Nathan Green was making the whiskey, taught him how to make the whiskey. Jack was actually the second master distiller. So he became this well-known guy, and he sat right next to George.
That's a huge testament.
And that was a big photo. You know, it's fascinating.
We should print that photo off and put it in our bars. That's a pretty cool thing.
We should.
Yeah.
And then
you could tell the story with the Uncle Nearest as you should sell it to people.
And you can you can drink Uncle Nearest bourbon right next to Jack Daniel's Tennessee. Or actually, this is Tennessee whiskey.
Why it's Tennessee whiskey. Yeah, I don't know.
We did drink. How many times did I say bourbon? Once, right? In this episode?
Yeah, just now. Same
one
time.
One time. Yeah, to be fair, though, we did drink half a bottle of Uncle Nearest.
Actually, we did. I didn't realize it was that low.
We pretty much opened it.
Yeah.
So to be fair, it works.
I mean, he made a hell of a whiskey.
Nathan, your whiskey is amazing.
Yeah, now one of the things, though, we don't have his exact recipe from when he started. They can only put bits and pieces together of things that they found to kind of try to imitate what he came up with.
But what we have, and we'll skip ahead just a little bit from the distillery, is some of the work they've done is, you're right, we don't have that original recipe, but what we do have, a few recipes that pay homage to the way he would have been making it, or how they, you know, the flavor profile, and I guess based off some of the notes. So they got three blends. Well, I say two blends, one single barrel, but three labels for the Uncle Nearest line. One that is a blend of 8 to 14-year-old whiskeys. Another that is an 11-year-old minimum single barrel. And then they have a 7-year-old small batch. And I think that's what we're drinking right now, right?
Yes.
That's the 7. Yeah. So 7-year-old small batch. Which is really,
it's 100 really proof.
Nice. It's 100 proof, which perfect. Is probably why.
that's why you're calling it bourbon, because you've had half a bottle of it.
That's probably why. So anyway, back to the family, right? So he's got three sons.
Yeah,
for Jack.
Yeah. So this time, just to kind of get the timeline back to where we are now. 1875 is when Jack bought this distillery. Green stayed on and became his head distiller. Well, in 1884, Jack Daniels actually moved his distillery across town to another part of Tennessee. He bought a distillery that was essentially going out of business and moved his operations over there. And at this point, Nathan Green, Uncle Nearest, we assume is starting to retire, and he's getting out of the business, stops working for Jack, yet his three sons go to work for Jack Daniels at this point in 1884.
Right. And then after that, it's his grandsons. He's had four grandsons.
Yeah, that he had grandsons that, and then, that started working.
Yeah, and then even still today, like there's been a Green working.
Descendant of a Green.
A descendant of Nathan Green working at the Jack Daniel Distillery the entire time.
From day one.
From day one until even today, there's someone there that's a Green descendant.
Which is incredible.
Fascinating.
And that's also another fascinating reason why or how this story got lost or
right. You know, so you got to ask yourself, well, how, what the hell, man? Like, how do you lose this story?
Yeah, like, your family's working for this distillery. Like, someone knows what this story is.
Someone knows something, and we're not leaving the room. Someone knows something. Out. Yeah, but so, you know, just it's complicated. I mean, I think that's the, you know, how much more can, you know, you hate it when you're like.
Yeah, the easiest way to say that. I mean,
well. Yeah, but you know, it's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It is complicated. So, you know, take it all the way back to the beginning when it was, you know, Jack first coming online. It was the end of the Civil War. They've created this brand and he's building, like he's ambitious and he's pushing the product and he's becoming known.
Salesman too. He just went out there and just crushed it.
Oh, yeah, just killed the competition. Yeah. Just going at, well, he not only was he just so savvy as a businessman, he had Nathan Green's.
Yeah, he had this amazing whiskey.
He had this amazing whiskey to go with it. So you team those guys up and they just killed it, right? But then still consider the times. Man, who's going to buy whiskey from a black distiller?
Yeah, I mean, that's.
I mean, I know that sounds like an asshole thing to say,
yeah,
but
it sounds horrible. But I mean, like, bottom line, yeah, like.
Bottom line, that's what it was.
Was a slave just less than 10 years before this distillery even opened. Especially now you're in Tennessee too. Like,
yeah, I imagine it was really rough, you know. Yeah. But and then you continue on and you're like, well, it's been 100 years, you know, why not? And you're like, well, you know, let's not forget probably some of our listeners right now and then some of the listeners' parents existed in a time in this country where schools and diners and salons and barbershops were segregated, and even drinking fountains were segregated. I mean, this was like in a lot of our lifetimes.
Yeah, that's
come on, obviously, like,
yeah, in all reality, it really wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't even still today. We're dealing
with what's going on right now, and it's the same exact thing. I mean, it's mm-hmm. still this, you know, fight of trying to give credit where credit's due a lot of times,
right. And that's why I think this story is like now is if there was ever a time for this story to come out,
it's yeah. What now. A great time too.
The perfect. We need this story.
Yeah.
Like this was an amazing time in America's history when there was slavery. You have a young white kid learning how to make whiskey and probably even some of the business behind it.
Right.
From a slave, from a black man. And they had this amazing relationship where they almost took on this father figure role for Jack, and they created this amazing relationship that spanned generations, right? It went past who they, you know what I mean? Like it continues on today.
Yeah.
Like that relationship is still,
right.
It's still here.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? That's really cool to sit back and think about too.
It is. And I
mean, and this is the exact kind of thing where you think of like, oh, your legacy or what, you know, what goes on when you're gone? Like this is the kind of stuff that happens.
It does. So, you know, so you can, you know, it sucks, but it's like, well, how was it lost and why didn't we hear about it until now? It's, well, just think about it, man. I mean, unless how
American,
naive do you have to be?
American like, whiskey, usually made in Kentucky or Tennessee, like in somewhere in the South.
It's a predominantly white male product.
Yeah.
Even today. And I know that's so something that's, you and I like work actively to combat
right.
in a lot of ways with, you know, our staff and then the programs we run for whiskey tastings and those sort of things and make it more inclusive and more diversified and bring more people in.
Yeah, just really how welcoming our bars
yeah,
and stuff
are.
Yeah,
be more
so,
welcoming
yeah.
And really, you know, make it about humanity and the whiskey and drinking and togetherness and knowing that we're all like kind of one people. And that's really, when you think about it, that's what Jack and Nathan were doing.
Yeah.
They were like way ahead of their time.
Oh my,
like,
yeah.
They were
it's
like,
incredible.
Guys, we're, this is,
we're this all, is how it's supposed to be. Why,
this
are,
is the
why
way
are you guys acting
to,
crazy?
Yeah, this is the way it should be. Right. So, you know, that's why I think it's pretty awesome. So,
yeah.
So now we kind of get it, right. That's what happened. So the next question is, how did we find out about
this? Yeah, how did this even come to light?
Yeah, so it has been almost forgotten.
Essentially.
For 150 something years.
Yeah, so.
So wait.
Yeah, oh, go ahead.
Let's take a break. Let's leave them in suspense.
This is the cliffhanger. If you come back to listen.
You have no choice but to stay tuned.
You will find out how this came back to light.
The exciting conclusion. Hey guys, it's your old friend Mike here, and I want to tell you about my bar, Revival 1869. And though we may not be in Raleigh, it is just outside of it in a cute little town called Clayton. We're actually right on the historic Main Street. We focus on craft cocktails. In fact, so much so that we make our own cocktail syrup in-house. We also fresh squeeze all of our juices. I'm also proud to say we have nearly 300 different bottles of whiskey, and that's a lot of fun, especially if you're a whiskey drinker. We also started a YouTube channel. It's called the Revival Social Club. It's more cheeky and fun. We talk history, tell some stories, but most importantly, we teach you how to make your own favorite cocktails at home. So, you know, check that out if you want. You can see everything we have going on at revival1869.com. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook at revival1869. And if you're interested in some of our cocktail syrups, well, check those out at Revival Syrups.
Mike, what are you doing?
Not what?
You're eating all the pizza. Save some for the studio.
Nah, man, it's too good.
You're supposed to be driving right now.
Yeah, I can multitask, Joey. I can eat a slice of pizza and drive a car.
Mike, there's a pepperoni in your beard.
I regret nothing.
You guys want to try the best pizza in Raleigh? Head on over to Vic's Italian Restaurant downtown. Visit them at vicsitalianrestaurant.com and make sure you follow their pizza bus at Vic's Pizza Bus on social media.
So good. All right, everyone, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that those words from our sponsors.
Amazing sponsors they are.
They're fantastic. They sponsor us with
love.
With love. So anyway, before the break, we were talking about, how is it possible this story got lost? Especially when you have, I think it's 9 generations of Greens working.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I think I read that. That was 9.
Was it 9? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot of generation.
Yeah. So how it got lost, and we talked about. I mean, you can understand that, yeah. Right?
So it's not like how
it's complicated. But now it's like, well, how did it get rediscovered? Yeah. You know, it's been lost for this whole time, and it really started from a New York Times article written by Clay Risen in June of 2000, or published in June of 2016, yeah. which was called what was it called? It was something, the forgotten ingredient, the lost ingredient.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was called when Jack Daniels. That's not it.
Jack Daniels. Well, there was an article. It came out in 2016.
Wait, here it is. Are you going to edit that? You should edit that. All right,
it's too late. It's in.
So the article is Jack Daniels embraces a hidden ingredient, help from a slave.
Nice.
So that was the article in 2016.
That was the article, and then. An amazing woman by the name of Fawn Weaver, who's a black woman. She's a historian. She's an author. She's a published author.
Yeah.
Well known. And I also read that she's a relationship blogger. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. She has some relationship books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something about, I can't remember what it's called, something about 28 days to not arguing with your spouse. Yeah. I need to pick up a couple of those books.
I feel like, yeah, because you guys are, but you argue in like a cute, fun way.
Oh yeah, it's really cute, Mike. Super cute.
No, you guys are great. You guys are great. You don't even worry about it, Joey. So Fawn Weaver. So Fawn, this amazing woman, she's inspired, utterly inspired by this New York Times article. Like, how is this even possible that the world's biggest name in whiskey learned what he knew from a slave, right? So what does she do? Does what any hard-hitting, ambitious...
Digs.
She digs and digs and digs. And she flies, from what I understand, flies to Washington, D.C., to the National Archives. There's a bunch of work there. I think that's right.
Yeah, but before... Actually, before all that happened is after she...
That's right, yeah.
After she read this article...
She did what everyone else does and Google some shit.
That's what she did. She did what everyone else does, and she Googled the name Green. And the only thing that popped up for Nathan Green was a book called Jack Daniel's Legacy, which was essentially a sort of a biography about Jack Daniel's life. She ordered the book and read it and marked the pages where it mentioned Green or any of his sons. And they were mentioned more than 50 times in the book.
Yeah. For a book that was written in the 1960s,
too. 1967, which during the sit-ins and this, everything that we had going on. It's
almost like the universe was placing these little gems along the way.
Yeah.
So Fawn would find them. They were hidden, and she found them. And it led her to D.C. I'm almost certain I read.
And it led you guys to this right here. So you're welcome.
And then it led us to our podcast. To me and you drinking half a bottle of
Uncle
Nearest premium whiskey. And then from there, she did a bunch of research, found out a lot of historical data, just document after document about who he was, and then traveled to Tennessee where she sought out his descendants and talked to them and interviewed them, almost like investigative journalist style, like really went after it. And then she dug up, I don't know if she like literally dug up artifacts, but she found, she might have, but she found these artifacts and then historical documents, and she's found this connection, a very real connection. You can't deny these connections, right? And she was able to prove these things, created a movie. I think they displayed the movie. That doesn't make sense. They showed the movie.
They showed the movie.
Was it the Tribeca?
They unveiled it.
Is that what they do with movies? You unveil them?
I guess you unveil them, yeah.
All right.
Do you drop movies?
I guess you drop it like it's hot. I guess you could.
It's the drop date of that movie.
So she created this short film, which premiered at the Tribeca Film Center in New York, called The Story of Nearest Green. And from what I understand, she invited some of his descendants to the movie.
That's really cool.
And this is kind of what led her to creating the actual brand, Uncle Nearest, the whiskey brand.
Yeah.
Because she had realized after she had watched the movie, and I think while in conversation with the Green family, was wow, in a world that moves so quickly, where we're constantly being bombarded by information and entertainment and those sort of things. This movie may be popular now, and it may be critically acclaimed, which I think it was. It won some awards, but then what happens after that? It gets forgotten like any other movie.
Yeah.
So I think the story goes is she was talking with the family and was like, well, how do we preserve this legacy? Right. Cause this is an amazing story. And they said, put his name on a bottle.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. She asked them like, what would honor.
Yeah.
Nearest Green. And they said,
the legend, the legacy.
Yeah. And they essentially, like, they said his name should be on a bottle.
Just like that.
And damn it, if it's not on a bottle.
Damn. She's like, oh. Done.
She's like, oh, you want his name on a bottle? We can make that happen.
But that's the coolest thing. Like, imagine that. Like, how do we preserve Joey Barber's legacy? And then someone's like, you put a name on his bottle. I mean, how cool, how amazing is that? And, well, that's what they did. So,
what's really cool about that is not only is his name on a bottle, there's a whole distillery open, like, pretty much in its honor now.
And what's even more remarkable about that distillery is where it's located.
Yes. Where is it located, Mike?
It's where the old Jack, the original.
All right, Jack Mike's not going to tell you.
Actually, I'm not. We'll take another break, and when we come back.
So Fawn Weaver found where the Dan Call Farm was, where the original Jack Daniel's distillery was, and bought the property.
And built the distillery.
Bought the property.
Right on top of
built it. Built Uncle Nearest Distillery right there.
If there was ever a baller move.
I mean, that's awesome.
It's amazing. It is.
Oh, this used to be your distillery? Well, guess what?
It is. We're going to make it that way again. And she did. So, you know, obviously, I think if you remember, I talked about the different labels that the Uncle Nearest Distillery is putting out. There's an 8 to 14-year-old blend, an 11-year minimum single barrel, and then a 7-year-old small batch. Clearly, they're not... They're not making those yet, so they're sourcing right. them. I mean, they're in the process of making their whiskey now, but as any whiskey drinker knows, it takes...
Yes, it's not an overnight really, process.
No, it's not. And you really... The maturation, the aging is really what works the magic.
Yeah, and there's cost in that, so you need to get something out. But the thing is, what they did right is they actually put good product in. I mean, they actually take pride in this, because you see a lot of craft distilleries come out where... You know, like I said, there's still bills that need to be paid, and this stuff isn't maturing for 4, 5, 6, 7 plus years.
Well, their minimum is a 7-year.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. But what I'm saying is, like, right. some of these craft distilleries will get something that's like a 3-year-old product, you know, 4-year-old, try to, you know, just get something in the bank and until they get their own stuff out. But these guys did it right by getting older product that tastes good.
They sourced it from some pretty amazing places.
Yes.
In Tennessee. So it's true Tennessee whiskey, which goes through the Lincoln County process.
Yeah, we can't tell you where they source them, and they can't tell you where they source
There's
them.
There's a lot of non-disclosures.
NDAs but, and lawyers, but
and we all
you
know
can taste it and we can...
we can assume and...
we can narrow it down to a couple. Yeah.
And interestingly, it's we'll just say it because they even say it, like it's not Jack Daniels.
Right.
I mean, they make it pretty clear that it's not coming from the Jack Daniels distillery. So how many more distilleries are in?
Yeah,
big enough that can big enough that can actually source, and then like one of them is like well known for sourcing.
They probably have a little bit of a hand in.
But regardless, I mean, it's one thing to make the like. So I think one thing that's kind of lost on people, and I see this a lot at Revival, and maybe you see it at the Blind Barber. But you get guys in, and they almost like, you know, they kind of hate on guys who source stuff, and it's like, well, let's make no mistake. Yeah. They're buying it from somebody else, but what they're buying is something that's been, distilled and then aged for some amount of time.
Yeah.
But then that new distillery, like this Uncle Nearest, they're taking those barrels in and they're allowing them to age a little like longer to mature further. And then they're blending those and proofing those down to whatever proof they want. You know, so there's an art and a science that gets added on the end.
Oh yeah, there's
that
for
you
sure.
Don't see on the front end where they source it from. You know what I mean?
Right. There's for sure an army. We like you said, we get that all the time in here too. Right. You know, people come in and say, well, they source it from somewhere. And what I have to tell people is, yeah, you're right. They might not make their own product, or their own product might not be made, might not be ready yet. Not just Uncle Nearest, but like several other brands.
A lot of them.
Yeah, a ton. Way more than you think.
Probably more than half of what's on both of our shelves.
A lot more than 50% of the whiskeys out there are sourced, for sure. But what I go into is, yes, it might be sourced, but here's what I ask. Can you walk into a warehouse of 20,000 barrels, pick out the 500 that you want to buy, and blend them in a way to make it a good product? And that's where this art and science is.
I mean,
if you can do that, that is a good distiller and whiskey maker. It's not just let's buy barrels and throw it in a bottle. There's a lot more to it than that.
Oh, for sure. But you know, like what's the hardest part in making whiskey? And I always really think it's the blending.
Yeah.
The final step, the final few years in that aging process when you're really fine tuning, you know, the flavor profile that you're looking for, the blending and the proofing, you know, cause you got to get it to where you want it. And finding that very unique flavor profile, there's a lot of art and science.
Well, and also to be able to blend X number of barrels per batch to make a consistent product. I mean, it has to taste the same as it did last time.
And that's the point about Uncle Nearest.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of what we're getting at is they really, because this too, I think with Fawn Weaver and the rest of her crew, that's an all woman minority staff.
Yeah,
right?
She's the first all woman board, I believe, like for a distillery.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
like she's broken so many barriers, and then she brought the legend of Uncle Nearest back. But that's the one thing that I also is remarkable is that to them it's not just a whiskey, it's this legend, right? So there's almost this added sense of responsibility to create the finest product that you can, you know, in order to really honor this legacy. It's not like, do you remember? So I got really mad because there was some whiskey that came out and they just slapped, I'm not going to name the name because I don't want to, whatever, but they slap historical figure names on these bottles. And it was like corn whiskey. Do you remember? It was like almost 80% corn and like it was garbage. Yeah. It came out like a couple years ago and they're like two historical figures. And they kept trying to sell it to me at the ABC. They're like, Mike, don't you want more of this? I'm like, no, it's awful. It was totally a gimmick. It was like, we just throw this name on there and we're trying to like, there's a difference between that and what Fawn Weaver's doing with Uncle Nearest.
1,000% difference.
There's like a amazing sense of responsibility to get this right.
Yeah.
To honor the legacy and the legend of who this person was.
And going back to, you're talking about the people that, that she has working for up there and the team they have. One of the super interesting things that I found is that a lady by the name of Sherry Moore worked at the Jack Daniel's distillery for more than 30 years and ended up being their head of whiskey production. I mean, head of whiskey production is what it sounds like. You're in charge of
pretty much all of it.
She's not a distiller, but she's pretty much in charge of everything that's going on. Anyway, she retired from Jack Daniel's distillery. She's actually a direct descendant from Jack Daniel's. Well, Fawn Weaver talked to her. They became friends, got a good bond. Sherry Moore is now working as the head of whiskey production for Uncle Nearest Distillery now. It's so awesome. It kind of comes around full circle. Yeah,
it really does. It's pretty amazing. And then the brand itself too, like they knocked it out of the park, man. I mean, when they created this, it's the most awarded new whiskey that's got over 75 awards since July of 2017, which is when it debuted. In 2019, it was one of two whiskeys named World Best Whiskeys at the Whiskey Magazine 2019 World Whiskey Awards. I believe in probably the same year, it didn't give a name or a year. Cigar and Spirit Magazine named it one of the top five whiskeys in the world. And right now it's available in 50 states and I think 12 countries.
Yeah, 10 or 12 countries. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it just came out. Well, and it's already that big.
Yeah.
You're onto something, man.
And not even that it just came out, but think about when you said that New York Times article came out that Fawn Weaver read, 2016. So within 2 years, she did all this research, brought all this back to light, got this property that used to be the Jack Daniel's distillery, and pretty much started sourcing barrels and opened up a distillery within a two-year time frame, essentially.
She's got to be one of the most remarkable people. I mean, that level of inspiration and work ethic.
Oh, that's just, yeah.
I don't know anyone.
We should have her on the show. Yeah. Fawn Weaver, if you're listening by any chance of the imagination.
Maybe if you just talk to us and then we can, you know, maybe.
I mean, an email, anything, a letter in the mail, like whatever.
Yes. We want to learn from you, Fawn. I mean, help us figure this thing out.
It's super interesting though.
One of the most amazing stories. So, just a few more things, you know, with this.
Well, their legacy program too.
The legacy program, it's really fantastic. So, after she dug up all this information and she's like, look, this is what it is, right? The Jack Daniel's distillery was like, you're absolutely right. So they actually have a Uncle Nearest, I don't know if it's a display sounds like the wrong word, but a section or
at least like credit, like in there.
Well, it's in their visitor bureau. Right. It's like a whole big thing with Uncle Nearest and how he taught Jack. And then more so, you know, Fawn reached out to Jack Daniel's and Jack Daniel's agreed on this really cool project that they're working on. It's a joint three-pronged initiative aimed at increasing diversity in American whiskey industry. So they pledged a combined $5 million as part of the Nearest and Jack Advancement Initiative.
That's so cool.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a three-pronged thing. And, what I read was to develop a pipeline for women and people of color in the distilling industry or the distilling business. And then two, create programming that helps African-American startups in the spirit industry. And three, put more people of color in leadership roles, which I think is fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
The diversity is, if you really want progress in any industry, diversity is what you need. It really opens everything up. You get brand new perspectives and you get a lot more out of it. And this is a fantastic way because even in our, you've seen it, you know, it's kind of one-sided.
Yeah.
But I know that it's changing, and I think with what Fawn is doing is really fantastic, and it's going to help.
But another one of the things that Fawn Weaver is doing with this, with the distillery, Uncle Nearest, yeah, is she's pledging to have money set aside for anyone in the green bloodline to be able to go to college.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
I mean,
that.
That's...
How did I miss that?
I don't know how you missed it. It was in your beard, Mike.
It was in my beard. Yeah. I lost in the beard.
But yeah, so essentially, if you know anyone that's in the green lineage, they have the availability to go to college. I'm not sure if it's like a full ride or how much they're doing towards that, but just the fact that there's an offering there for,
fantastic,
for people, that's amazing.
That's great. Yeah. And okay, so I found what I was looking for. I'm going to go back to
okay,
it. Because I love this collaboration that's happening with the Uncle Nearest brand and the Jack Daniel's, yeah, brand. And Weaver is quoted as saying, "We're together. We tell the story about Jack in a way that also makes you want to drink Jack Daniel's as well." Because I think everyone appreciates what happened here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a remarkable story. And we hit on it earlier, but it's just this amazing story. And it's one of those things where it's like, look, we're in this together.
It's showing, man, the mutual respect.
Mutual, you know, respect.
I mean, they both have mutual respect
and
for each other.
And the humanity.
That's a huge thing.
I think that's
thing,
the key,
yeah,
is like the humanity behind it. And like whiskey should bring us together regardless of color, I was going to say color again. Regardless of color,
we get race, a mic. We
sexual, whatever orientation. It doesn't matter. None of that
social
matters.
Status.
Social status. At the end of the day, we're all people. We're all one people on this planet, enjoying one of the finest spirits ever to be created. Right. That's the idea.
Yeah.
It's just humanity through whiskey.
I love that. Humanity through whiskey.
I'm coining that. Oh, that's mine now. I trademarked. Humanity,
yeah,
through whiskey.
That is going to be on the next Bar Curious podcast t-shirt.
Humanity
through whiskey.
I love it. Yep. That's if you're listening, that's ours now. Don't,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
you
can't
it.
Take that.
Don't
you can't
steal
take
it.
That.
So one last thing. Or did you have anything else? Because I
no,
got
I
one
think
last thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Cool. So got this really great quote that I found. So it's not mine, but I found it online, and it was, "If you want to appreciate jazz, you better know who Louis Armstrong was. And if you want to appreciate American whiskey, you should know who Nathan Nearest Green was." And I think that's very...
That's really cool.
That's amazing.
Very that true. Should also go up in our bars.
It should. We got a lot of things we need to put up on our bars.
We do. We do. And it seems like there's a lot of like Uncle Nearest stuff that we have to put
it's up. All of it. Yeah, probably so. Well, rightfully so, too. It's what we need. This is what we need now. Get yourself a bottle of Uncle Nearest, sit down, drink it.
Yeah, please do.
And think about stuff, man. You know?
Life.
Just think about
people,
life. People.
People. Humanity.
Better. Be better.
Be better.
Be better. Humanity through whiskey. Anyway, if you got nothing else, Joey, I have nothing else.
Well, we probably should tell people to follow us.
Well, I am. That
on
was
our
where
social
I was,
media.
Because
you sound like you're trying to sign off there and get
no,
away.
No. I was going to say, if you don't have anything else, I have nothing else. And that leads us to the end of our episode on Nathan Green. We hope you all enjoyed it. If you did, please like and subscribe our podcast. You can follow us on all the amazing places you download your podcast. But you can also email us if you have questions or you want to check us on some of our information at barcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on our Facebook page and our Instagram page. Both are
Both are Bar Curious Podcast. I got you, Mike. I got you. Bar Curious Podcast. Facebook, Instagram. Like our pages.
I was thinking of what we're about to do next and what I was going to say. And I was like, that Uncle Nearest is good, man. That bottle was halfway empty about 15 minutes ago. I think we're down to a quarter of it now. It's really good. Well, anyway, thanks for listening, guys. We
Thank
hope you,
you
enjoyed it. Stay tuned next week when our next episode will come out. Bye.
Stay tuned.